What's happening, everybody? On today's show, Florida had their spring game last night. We'll hit on some of the big takeaways from that and why I think Anthony Richardson is going to be one of the better quarterbacks in the SEC this year. Also, some other notes from around the conference as Alabama prepares for their spring game, some recruiting news, Auburn and Florida Gymnastics, they advance to go compete for a national title, and our buddy John Neighbors of Locked On Razorbacks, he caught up with head football coach Sam Pittman at Arkansas as they prepare for their spring game. We'll let you hear some of that conversation. Locked On SEC starts right now.
You are Locked On SEC, your daily podcast on the Southeastern Conference, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And what is happening, everybody? Welcome into Locked On SEC. It's great to have you guys along. I'm Chris Gordy. Thanks for making Locked On SEC your first listen every day. And remember, Locked On SEC is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube and LockedOnSEC.com. Let's jump into it. Plenty to discuss. Let's go around the conference.
Boots out to the right. Intercepted.
Makes the handoff.
What a catch.
Around the conference.
And we start with Florida's spring game last night as Billy Napier having his first one as the new head coach in Gainesville. Watched the majority of it, particularly in the first half, taking some notes. And I liked what I saw, particularly at quarterback. The story of the night to me was Anthony Richardson. Of course, with Emory Jones entering the transfer portal a couple weeks ago, this is Anthony Richardson's team now, and it is his time to shine. And he looked much improved to me as a signal caller on Thursday night. At halftime of the spring game, he was 13 for 15 passing for 167 yards and two touchdowns. Also had a rushing touchdown later on. He just looks good. He looks the part. He looks comfortable. He has control of the offense. Didn't let any passes sail like he did at times last year. I like what I've seen out of Anthony Richardson, and I really do believe he's going to be among, say, the top four quarterbacks in the SEC at the end of this year, production-wise. Now, will it result in wins for Florida? I don't know, but I think Anthony Richardson is going to be a problem for the SEC and may pull off some upsets for the Gators, beating teams that they're not supposed to this year. Now, on the other side, Jack Miller, the transfer from Ohio State, he was 10 of 18 for 104 yards and a pick at halftime. Didn't like as much as what I saw out of Jack Miller. You know, some people said when he transferred, oh, he's not going to Florida to sit. He's going there to compete, win that starting job. Don't know if what we saw out of Jack Miller gives us that conclusion. And look, it is a spring game. We have to remember that. But I do like what we saw out of Anthony Richardson. At running back, Montrell Johnson, he had a team high 33 yards rushing with a touchdown at the half. Steve Spurrier jumped in the booth on SEC Network, and he gave a rave review of Anthony Richardson. He said, look, Richardson is a talented player. He can be big time for us. Hopefully, he can stay very healthy this year. He can throw the ball. He can run. Hopefully, we'll use him occasionally running, not dominantly. He's an excellent passer. He is a natural quarterback. So, Steve Spurrier, very high on what he has seen from Anthony Richardson heading into this upcoming season. Some other takeaways from what I saw. Number 82, Jamarcus Weston. I like what I saw out of him. He made some nice catches, ran some nice routes, ran well in space, protecting the football. I think number 82 is a guy to watch this year at Florida in Jamarcus Weston. At running back, Johnson looked good, like we said. Lorenzo Lingard, he had some nice runs. DeMarcus Bowman looked pretty good. Defensively, I liked number 15, Derek Wingo, an interior linebacker. He was making some plays. Number 30, DeJuan Black, he seemed to be around the ball a whole lot. At corner, Jordan Young looked pretty good. And, of course, always fun, big number 21, Desmond Watson. He got some action in on the D-line. He's a sophomore, 6'5", of course, weighs over 400 pounds. Played in almost every game last year for the Gators, rotating on that D-line. He's a force. And should rotate on that D-line once again for the Gators. But after the game, Billy Napier said he liked what he saw out of his first-team starters. The problem for Florida is going to be depth. If they have injuries to any of their big spots, it's going to be a problem because I don't think they have much depth there. But their starters are fine. Their starters are going to compete. And Florida's going to win some games next year in the SEC that I think everybody's expecting, oh, transitional year, down year. I don't think Billy Napier's thinking that with the Gators, but we will see. Meanwhile, over at Alabama, Nick Saban talking with the media about what to expect with a successful spring game. He said, look, for us to have a great crowd on Saturday, regardless of what the weather is going to be, I think that will send a huge message to our guys. Saban referred to what he believes really helped get this program off the ground, the first A-Day game where over 90,000 people showed up. He said that sent a message to the whole nation of how committed the fans of Alabama are to their program. In terms of on the field, Nick Saban said the spring game should be an extension of the fundamentals that they've been running throughout spring practices. He said to be able to see experience and growth of our players who are involved in the spring game to find out how many guys on our team can play winning football. That is the goal. Now, as far as returners go, Saban suggested wide receiver JoJo Earl, wide receiver Jermaine Burton, DB Kool-Aid McKinstry, running back Jahmyr Gibbs, and wide receiver Aaron Anderson are all possible options for the return game, punt or kickoff returners. So they got some speed in there. JoJo Earl handled a good bit of it last year, but got a lot of options there. Interested to see what the reigning Heisman Trophy winner Bryce Young can do to build off of last season heading into what is likely going to be his last season at Alabama, as he's right now projected to be a top five pick in next year's NFL draft. Now, speaking of the NFL draft, the NFL just announced 21 future stars will attend the 2022 NFL draft in Las Vegas. Three Georgia players are heading to Vegas to attend the draft in person: Jordan Davis, N'Kobe Dean, and Devontae Wyatt. Now, absent from that list, notably, is Trayvon Walker, who a lot of the mock drafts have expected to, or projected to go top five in this draft. So it's going to be weird that Trayvon Walker's not there. Also of note, no Derek Stingley from LSU. He's another one that a lot of people expect to be a lock to at least be top 15, if not top 10. But some other guys from the SEC getting the invite: Charles Cross, the big offensive lineman from Mississippi State, he expects it to go in the top 10. Evan Neal from Alabama, he'll be top 3. Matt Corral, quarterback from Ole Miss, he's expected to be a first rounder. And Jameson Williams, wide receiver from Alabama, of course, coming off that injury, probably going to be later in the first, but might work out better for him. He'll go to a really good spot. Over at LSU, Brian Kelly, they continue their spring preparation, and there was some thought originally tight end Nick Storrs, who used to be a pitcher on the baseball team, he had medically retired last football season. But on Thursday, LSU reporter Wilson Alexander tweeted out that Storrs was back on the roster wearing number 48 this season. Storrs has appeared in 10 games for the Tigers over his career, making one start, so we will see if he plays a little tight end for the LSU football team. The SEC office, they did announce some changes to the football schedule. The SEC announced Thursday that two Week 1 games are being moved from Saturday, September 3rd to Thursday, September 1st. Additionally, the Missouri season opener versus Louisiana Tech and Tennessee's game versus Ball State, they will both move to Thursday night, September 1st. So it's going to be fun. The Vols will kick their season off at 7 Eastern on SEC Network, while Mizzou, they will begin at 7 Central, 8 Eastern on ESPNU. Additionally, the conference revealed the annual battle line rivalry between Arkansas and Mizzou will once again be held on the Friday after Thanksgiving. We play 2:30 Central, 3:30 Eastern on CBS. So kind of cool, some things changing up as already to get, we'll get that first Thursday kick started of college football week with two SEC teams in action. That's going to be a lot of fun. In recruiting news, Alabama, they picked up a four-star defensive lineman in Yanze Pierre out of the state of Alabama. He's the number 84 defensive lineman in the class of 2023. Over at Vanderbilt, Clark Lee got some good news as they picked up a recruit dipping into Texas, landing a commitment from a 5'10", 190-pound running back, Cedric Alexander. And lastly, shout out to Auburn and Florida Gymnastics. Auburn, they defeated both the defending national champs in the Michigan Wolverines and SEC rival Mizzou with a score of 197.8 to be one of the two teams from the semis to advance to the Final Four. Auburn's Suni Lee won the national title on balance beam, and the number two Florida Gators. They managed to rally from behind to take an overall victory with a score of 197.9. Florida's Trinity Thomas won the all-around title after scoring a perfect 10 on the floor. And Gators Gymnastics, they have advanced to the NCAA Championship Final. They will aim for their first title since 2015. So congrats to Florida and Auburn. They will be joined by Oklahoma and Utah in Saturday's team final. So there you have it. That is your recruiting update or gymnastics update from the SEC. Congrats to both of them. Go get us another national championship for the conference. Thank you guys again for making Locked On SEC your first listen every day. Coming up next, John Neighbors, his conversation with Sam Pittman. We'll let you hear a little bit of that. Look, we are about to head into the summer, guys. That means you want to have your body looking a little bit better, and that means staying away from some of the junk food, making better decisions, and our friends at Built Bar are here to help you out. Now, look, Built Bars, they are covered in 100% chocolate. Yes, real 100% chocolate. They are low in calorie, high in protein. Replace the candy bars and junk food that you got with a Built Bar. You can go to Built.com right now. You can see all the stats on what they have to offer. 130 calories, 4 grams sugar, 4 grams net carbs, 17 grams of protein packed in there. That's the majority of the Built Bars have that. You compare that to candy bars, which are usually double in calories, 30 grams of sugar, and everything else. Built.com, look, they've got some delicious flavors as well. They got the mint brownie, the coconut almond. Always something new for you over at Built.com. And when you head over there, make sure you use our promo code LOCKED15. LOCKED15 going to get you 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKED15, get 15% off at Built.com. Rolling along here, Locked On SEC, and for those of you who subscribe to the Locked On Razorbacks podcast, our buddy John Neighbors does a fantastic job doing that show. But for those of you who didn't hear, he caught an exclusive interview with Sam Pittman just yesterday from the Arkansas Razorbacks. So I figured, let you hear a little bit of that. Sam Pittman very excited about yet another, expectations raising yet again in Fayetteville, and so here was a little bit of John Neighbors from Locked On Razorbacks with Razorback head coach Sam Pittman.
Coach, appreciate you joining us this afternoon. How you doing?
John, my pleasure. Good to see you, man. Appreciate you asking me.
Coach, I know that also this spring practice, you're going through it right now. You didn't have a spring practice your first year because of COVID. The next year, you're coming off the COVID season, coming off a 3-7 year. You got a new starting quarterback, a lot of different personnel there. But this spring, you're coming off of a pretty successful season from last year. A lot of Razorback fans are excited. People are really buying into the program right now. Just what's been the overall vibe from you, your staff, your team, this spring practice compared to maybe where you were a year ago?
Well, John, I think which is a big deal to myself and our team. But I think any time that you have the people that talk to the most kids and you can keep them, in other words, your three coordinators, which they talk to the most kids. Our very first day of spring ball this year was like we had been together for a long time. It was really cool. It was really neat. Because we kept Coach Browse, Coach Odom, obviously Coach Fountain. But the other thing about it is we kept Jamil Walker, our strength coach. And then, of course, the next guy that talks to most people is your offensive line coach, and he had opportunities or an opportunity to leave, and he decided to stay here with us as well. And so I think that a big thing about spring ball is keeping the culture, the current coaches. I think that was huge. And in all honesty, it may not look like we have a ton of starters coming back, John, but we really have a lot of guys that's played a lot of ball coming back for us.
Well, I wanted to start there too with the assistant coaches and your coordinator staying, because if you look at the landscape in college football, I see other major programs, even in the SEC, coordinators are taking other coordinator jobs. It's not even like they're getting that head coaching position. They're just going kind of in lateral moves, as some people would consider. But you have been able to keep Kendall Briles, Barry Odom. You mentioned Scott Fountain, your strength coach, all of those guys, which I know is huge, but I thought it was interesting when we got a chance to meet with Coach Briles and Coach Odom. They were both asked about staying in Arkansas, and the first thing they said was Coach Sam Pittman, the culture that you're building and everything. When you hear them say that, though, and you hear the you know, obviously having the culture that you've built and obviously having assistant coaches buy into it, I mean, how does that make you feel when that's the first thing that they say is because you, that's why they stayed here?
Well, it hits you right in the heart. I mean, it's awesome, you know, and it's so kind for, I called both of them and thanked them for saying that, you know, but I felt like they meant it as well, you know, and so, you know, you treat a man like a man and with respect. And I've always said the title doesn't make the man makes the man. And I'm the same guy I was when I was at, you know, Beggs High School, that maybe a little bit more knowledge and things of that nature. But I don't believe that because I'm the head coach at Arkansas, it should change who I am. And hopefully it hadn't. And obviously these guys coming back, it tells a little bit of that we're doing some things right here as far as men go. And if you're doing it right with your coaching staff, you're surely doing it right with your players as well. So very hard. I felt it in my heart. I was very honored that they said that.
And you mentioned players and the returning starters that you have. You also added some guys, of course, with the high school class and then the transfer portal. You really added a lot of people there too as well. And I've been curious about this because you've been around coaching for a long time. You recruited really well when you were an offensive line coach at Arkansas and at Georgia and all those things too. But it was mainly out of high school. But now that the transfer portals happen, is the recruiting of those guys similar to what it is recruiting guys in high school? Is it you giving them the same pitches? What's the kind of the correlation there as far as approaching guys in the portal to come to your school and approaching guys who are in high school to come to your school?
Well, high school, you're recruiting a class. So in high school, you're recruiting whatever your board numbers say. But let's say you're recruiting 5 offensive linemen, 2 backs, a quarterback, you know, boom, boom, boom. And so you're recruiting a team out of high school. In the portal, you're recruiting a need. And that need could be recruiting in the past hasn't been good there. It could mean the guy you've lost kids in the portal from that position. It could be injuries. It could be. So once you go in the portal, it's for a need. And it makes it a little bit, in my opinion, easier because you're selling, you're not going in the portal necessarily for depth. If that's the worst thing that happens in the portal, that you get a kid that he supplies depth for your team and he's a good second team guy, that's not bad either. So we would not go in the portal unless it is a major need that we think that we need a player at that position. So it's a little bit different. You're recruiting a team out of high school and you're recruiting individuals at a particular position out of the portal.
Coach Sam Pittman of the Razorback football team is our guest right now on the Locked On Razorbacks podcast. Coach, KJ Jefferson is a guy that it just played so great last year. And going into last season, and this is something I talked about on my show and my podcast, I saw all these lists of people having, well, he's 14th in the SEC as far as starting quarterbacks go. And I understand that he wasn't a starter, but we saw in that Missouri game in your first year just what he was capable of. And then last season, he puts it all together, has a phenomenal year. Now suddenly people are buying into KJ, putting him at the top of their list of SEC quarterbacks. Just what's it been like for you to see him grow and to be able to kind of shut up the naysayers and thinking that he wouldn't be one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC?
Well, I wish I knew that the whole time. You know, I didn't. You know, he hadn't played a whole lot of ball before that Missouri game. And I can remember Coach Briles and I on the phone headed to the Missouri game talking to a quarterback in the portal. And I can remember having Coach Briles call the same kid we talked to going to Missouri after the game coming back. And I told Kendall, I said, we can't take him. We've got our quarterback of the future. We can't take him. We need to be loyal to who's loyal to us. And so I can remember that. And then I can remember KJ getting in front of the team because, you know, you always want to know what makes somebody click. And he talked about being ranked 14th in the SEC. And, you know, I could relate to that because when I got the job, I was the last Power Five coach, obviously 14th in the SEC and all those things too. Now, that didn't drive me quite as much as what I understand the 14th pick of KJ. You know, I think that really was a driving force to him. So he's going to have to find something else this year because he won't be ranked 14th going into this season. He'll have to find something else that makes him click.
And another guy that I know a lot of Razorback fans are excited to have back is Jalen Catalon because he missed the majority of last year, and they know how pivotal he was to that defense in 2020. How do you feel like his progression has gone coming off of that injury, and how's he looked so far in spring practice?
I think he's back. I think he's better than what he ever has been. A lot of confidence. You know, if you really look at Cat, he played more than four games, but when he broke his hand at the first half of A&M, which was game four, I'm not going to say he was done for the year, but he was. I mean, he had the shoulder, then the hand. He just wasn't the same guy. Now, he toughed it out and tried it and those things. And then we were smart. You know, we ended up getting him the surgery, but he's back full go, better than ever.
Yeah, no, Coach. It's another thing, too, that I thought was kind of cool is just seeing, you know, obviously in your going into your third season, not being a head coach at this level before, people kept bringing it up to you. Is there anything that, and I'm trying to make sure I say this right, is there anything that maybe as a head coach after going into your third season that you is different from what you expected, or maybe something that's been a little bit crazier than maybe what you anticipated?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I make so many mistakes, you know, all the time. Hopefully when I make them, I'm learning from that and don't do it again. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, I think a veteran coach makes mistakes. You know, we always try to take the I hope out of a game situation to I know because we've gone over it, we've practiced it, we're ready to go. We want to walk in there with a lot of confidence, but the number one thing is how many employees we have in the building and how many of, you know, how much conversation I have each and every day. You know, I thought I'd, you know, myself and the coaching staff would, you know, meet and this. I mean, we have 56, 57 employees in here, and all of them have at times needs, concerns, this, that, and that. So there's so much more meeting time with folks outside the immediate 10 position coaches than I ever thought it would be. I knew it was going to be heavy and hot in recruiting. You know, of course, they added the portal to us since then. COVID was certainly a challenging deal and just a lot of challenges to it. But if we solve the problem as fast as we can, then we'll move on to the next one. And I'm pretty low key, pretty, you know, I want to handle situations, show people respect. But I think that's been the biggest thing, just the amount of people and the amount of constant rotation of my office door.
That again, our buddy John Neighbors, his conversation with Sam Pittman over on the Locked On Razorbacks podcast. If you want to catch the entire interview with Sam Pittman, you can find it on Locked On Razorbacks. Coming up next, a little bit of issue some SEC fan bases took with the ESPN's latest FPI rankings. We'll get to that in just a second. Need to remind you, betonline.net, that is your number one source for all your betting stats and sports information. You can find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's NBA playoffs and the start of Major League Baseball season, of course, just a week underway. BetOnline, they are your continued source for all your sports wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. The Kentucky Derby's right around the corner. They'll have all kinds of information you need on that. Head on over to their website today. You can do so on your mobile device or your desktop. Learn more about all the trends and action going on out there, and keep in mind, betonline.net, betonline, it is where the game starts. Continue on here, Locked On SEC. And before we get out of here, I wanted to get to a little bit of, look, ESPN has this thing called the Football Power Index. They do some FPI rankings, and they used their All-State playoff predictor, and Heather Dinich put this up over on ESPN, but she says there are 9 teams that have at least a 10% chance to make the college football playoff, but only 6 have at least a 1% chance of actually winning the national title. So let's take a look at ESPN's FPI preseason top 25 rankings and the SEC teams that they have in there. Number one, no surprise, it's Alabama. They're the preseason FPI number one team. They have a 50% chance to win the SEC, a 79% chance to make the college football playoff, and a 52% chance to win the national title game. I wish everybody else around the SEC wishes they had some kind of chances like that. I mean, you have almost an 80% chance to make the playoff and over a 50% chance to win the title this year. They do say Alabama's biggest obstacle is still Georgia. Georgia has a 90% chance to win the SEC East this year, and they come in at number 3 in the FPI rankings. Basically, they said their biggest obstacle, going 3-0 against the West, including at home against Auburn and at Mississippi State during the regular season, and then, of course, whoever they will face in the SEC title game, likely Bama. Said the committee would like their road wins. Georgia's schedule includes neutral site games against Oregon and Florida, as well as true road trips to South Carolina and Mississippi State and Kentucky in back-to-back weeks in November. So Alabama and Georgia both big chances to build up their resumes throughout this year. But here's where it gets kind of sticky in the FPI preseason rankings. They got Auburn at number 10. And they only give Auburn a 1% chance to win the SEC and a 3% chance to make the college football playoff. Basically what it says is their biggest obstacle is winning the SEC West. Auburn, of course, went 6-7 last fall under Brian Harsin. So what the committee will like, Auburn's defense, which is projected as the 7th best unit in FBS. The Tigers ranked 22nd defensive efficiency last season. Now, right behind Auburn, they have LSU at number 11. And then you go down, Texas A&M is 14th, Ole Miss 17th, Kentucky 20th, Mississippi State 24th, and Florida 25th. I know what a lot of people are saying. Where the hell is Arkansas? Where the hell is Tennessee? And, of course, where is South Carolina? You can make an argument for them, building off of what they did last year. Again, it's ESPN using a bunch of computers and things. But, man, if there were ever a time to lose faith in FPI rankings, and it's no disrespect to Auburn or LSU, they just don't belong in any preseason top 11 in anything. Computers, opinions, pollsters, whatever. So again, Alabama 1, Georgia 3, Auburn 10, LSU 11, Texas A&M 14. A lot of Aggie fans saying, what are you kidding me? We're at least top 10 in every ranking. Ole Miss 17, Kentucky 20th, Mississippi State 24th, and Florida 25th. Again, it's mid-April, ESPN reaching for some kind of content. They did put in the ESPN article. Remember, Georgia came in at number 7 in last year's initial FPI rankings, so a lot can change. But yeah, throw away whatever grouping or whatever statistical model you're using to come up with the FPI, because Auburn and LSU 10 and 11 just doesn't make sense. No disrespect to those schools. And there you have it. That is going to do it for this edition of Locked On SEC. Reminder, you can catch the Locked On NFL podcast, NFL Draft podcast. Ryan Tracy and Eric Crocker bringing the NFL Draft to life with insight analysis, getting you guys ready for the NFL Draft. Free and available wherever you get your podcast. Thank you guys so much for making us your first listen every day. Go make your second listen. Check out some of our great other podcasts, including Locked On Razorbacks with John Neighbors. I'm Chris Gordy. Thank you guys for listening. Have a great weekend. Enjoy all the spring games. We'll be back with you on Monday, recapping all the action that happens in the spring games. A lot going on. Make sure you have a multi-TV setup like I do so you can watch all the spring games. It's going to be a busy, busy weekend across the SEC. We'll talk to you guys on Monday.